Hello there, and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Taylor.
And this week on the show,
we'll discuss soccer and cinema and why the beautiful game looks so ugly on the big screen.
If you've ever wondered what Stallone, Pelé, and Nazis have in common, then pay attention as we list our top five favorite soccer movies.
And as always, we'll close with a spelling bee. This week, it's actors or athletes who've appeared in soccer-related films.
So Talia and myself are both big soccer fans, and we're both big movie fans.
Yep.
But unfortunately, there aren't many good soccer movies, and we're a little concerned about that.
Yeah, we were talking about it the other day, and really, it seems like it boils down to the fact that there's kind of like three categories, I guess. You have soccer movies for kids, like Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell, like The Big Green from a long time ago, Ladybugs with Rodney Dangerfield.
Ladybugs?
Yeah.
I want to see that movie.
No, you don't. He coaches a team of girls. They're not very good, so he gets his son to cross-dress. it's lovely. Yeah. I think the lead actor in it was like every little girl's dream. So that was the main appeal there.
Orlando Bloom.
Oh, really? That's who you think of as every little girl's dream?
I'm just guessing. I know. So what are the other categories?
Well, actually, that one segues really well into the second one, which is kind of like teen movies, I guess. Okay. I guess a movie came out like 2006 called She's the Man, where a girl dresses up as a guy, and obviously she falls in love with one of her teammates.
Okay, there's a lot of cross-dressing in soccer movies.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew that was a subculture? But then you have, like, you know, Bennett, like Beckham, I'd say, is it kind of a teen movie? Maybe Shaolin Soccer, a movie about kung fu soccer players, because obviously someone needed to make that film. and then the third thing, sadly, I would say, is like hooligan films, such as Green Street Hooligans. You have Football Factory. There's a lot of other ones. And so I think those are like the three main ones. Maybe there's some others.
Well, there's documentaries, of course,
yeah,
which is a whole other thing that maybe we'll get into later.
Yeah, I think so.
The other category of Hollywood narrative film, I'd say there's underdog movies.
Yeah, you have to have those in sports.
And the obvious one from the last few years has been Goal.
And the overall like Goal trilogy.
Yeah.
The third one's supposedly coming out sometime.
The second and third one's even released over here.
I don't even know, but I saw the second one when I was in Turkey, and not surprisingly, the main character goes to Real Madrid, where he suffers, no way, but then succeeds, no way. But yeah, those kind of movies really do make you wonder if it's possible to make a good soccer-specific film.
Maybe we should get into what is the problem? Why can't they do it?
Well, for me, it's simply that you know, if you make a football movie, if you have like Any Given Sunday, you can hide your actors because
like NFL.
Yeah, if like you have the NFL in Any Given Sunday, Jamie Foxx is playing the quarterback, but obviously he's got tons of pads on and a big helmet. Like, it's not necessarily him playing. You don't really know the difference.
Okay.
In soccer, you know, you have a jersey, shorts, and socks. So you're going to know if it's not that guy. So the way directors hide it is either by doing shots from really far away that obviously aren't going to draw you into the action, or shots them really, really, really close up of like just their feet. And so you're not going to get a sense of the way the game's going. It's just going to be like kind of disjointed shots.
That's what always looks fake to me, is mm-hmm. when a soccer movie will get in close and the action.
Mm-hmm.
So probably basically to cheat, so they don't have to do the whole thing. And it just makes it look, it just looks wrong for some reason.
Yeah, and so I guess the only way you get around that is to find someone who can actually play. But, you know, I doubt, you know, George Clooney's going to train for 2 years to play a soccer role.
Well, that was my problem with Goal. The narrative in that wasn't terrible, but all the scenes where the guy had to kick the ball. You know, there's one where he takes a free kick.
Yeah.
And it just looks so unconvincing.
Like, yeah, he like hits it with his ankle, and then it's like his plant foot is really far away from the ball. And it's just like, that's not how you shoot.
Yeah, if that guy was on our Sunday team here and he stepped up to take a free kick, you can tell by the way he's standing, he shouldn't be taking it. Someone would tell him, no, get out of the way.
Yeah, definitely. And so you can't really hide that, you know, like if he's the main focal point and he's got to score the game winning free kick, you got to find a way to edit it. And that's even better is when you have the laughable, like CGI'd ball going into the corner of the goal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously you can't sit there and wait for 9 hours for this guy to finally hit a shot over the wall. So they have to do this thing where it's like,
there's not enough film in the world.
Exactly. So, you know, you see him really awkwardly strike the ball, and then it's this weird close-up of this ball that doesn't even look like a real ball, and it's just kind of floating into the net.
It's either the CGI or just a cutaway when it's really unnatural to cut from there to the shot of the ball going in. Like, it just makes it so obvious that isn't what's happened.
Are you talking about the elongated slow motion shot of his face after he strikes the ball?
Yeah, that's my other bugbear with with soccer movies is the slow motion.
Yeah.
Like, it can't just happen in normal time. Everything has to be slow motion and music and...
Because it's so dramatic.
Yeah.
I was actually watching a Manchester United game this weekend, and it struck me, like, how you have kind of the flow to the game, how it's the intricate passing and it's kind of organic play. And I don't know if you can really recreate that because, you know, you have baseball movies where it's a pitch and a swing, or football movies, it's a 3-second play. And with soccer, it's kind of, there's no stopping.
Maybe you've hit on something here, which is, we've discussed this before, possibly the reason soccer isn't so popular in America as the rest of the world is that America is used to these single moments.
Yeah.
As in like a down or a pitch swing, and a swing. Yeah. And maybe that's why it doesn't work in Hollywood, because people, it just doesn't translate well onto film.
So are you saying that it's not like interesting enough then?
Well, not necessarily that, but maybe the way a game of soccer is structured doesn't lend itself to a movie.
Yeah.
Because say in the NFL or in a, you know, an American football game, between downs, between plays, you can have drama. You can have the coach talking to one of his players or, you know what I mean? And little, there are moments to develop the story.
You can do a jump cut to Al Pacino just screaming for no apparent reason. That's what happens a lot.
But you can have him interacting and stuff going on the sidelines.
Yeah.
You can have the, in a baseball movie, I'm assuming you can have the coach talking to the batter or talking to the pitcher.
Or spitting. Yeah.
Or spitting. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
There's ways to build it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in soccer, the game is like, you get half time, but apart from that, it's continuous.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way to develop the story other than by showing the action, and that's what they're bad at.
Yeah, it's like what you were talking about with the slow motion, where they have to kind of slow it down. In Goal, for example, you know, the main character goes on this long run, and you're supposed to understand that he should be passing, and he's not. So you have the coach, you know, cutting back and forth from him dribbling to the coach, being like, pass it, pass it. And all of a sudden, he's been dribbling for like 45 seconds. It's like, you can't do that in a game, but that's how they have to do it. In football, you could just have the guy not, you know, throw the ball when he's supposed to, and you get it right away.
Oh, it takes soccer, 5 seconds.
Exactly. And in soccer, you can't really do that.
The way some films have tried to build a story away from the field is unfortunately usually with hooliganism.
Yeah. I find it no surprise that in college, one of the only soccer films that my friends really enjoyed was Green Street Hooligans. And it seemed to be mainly because it kind of like glorified the whole violent drinking, there's women around, that kind of atmosphere.
When it's all really, negative stereotypes.
Exactly. It's like what they're trying to do away with in England or the rest of the world.
Everywhere.
It seems, exactly. It seems like that's what the movie's trying to glorify.
Yeah, and I feel like if people are attracted to the movie for that reason, then they should just be watching some exploitation movie or something.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
No, exactly. Like, I think that's what it is.
Go to the grindhouse.
There you go. I think that's what it is, though. I think it plays into the idea of people want to become immersed in the kind of the violent counterculture. You know, you go back, you know, to movies like The Wild One with Marlon Brando about bikers, and then you have, you know, like mafia movies with The Goodfellas and Godfather and The Departed and Gangs in New York and things like that. American movies, when they're dealing with that kind of counterculture, they want to convey the violence and kind of glorify that violence. And I think that that's what happens, is people get drawn to that and expect that to be the environment in England or in any other, you know, soccer match.
And that's my big problem with hooligan movies, is that people think of them as soccer movies, and then they think that hooligans are like super fans of their club, like they become violent because they're such big fans.
Yeah,
but it's the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my opinion. That's most people's opinion who follow football closely.
Yeah,
that hooligans aren't really football fans. Mm-hmm. They're just thugs who use football and their club as an excuse to get into fights.
Yeah, like Green Street Hooligans, one that we talked about previously. It makes it look like these guys care so much about the team that they're going to defend their team, whereas In a lot of cases, this violence happens outside of the stadium, or even like maybe even in the same city, but not necessarily as a result of
the
game. It's just kind of like, we're here to fight, and also there's a game on.
If you think in America, some people are still learning about the game of soccer. If you see Green Street Hooligans and you see that, and you think that's the way fans behave, that's having a negative impact on the image of soccer in this country.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because I think that if you asked like some of the like uninitiated, or the people that, you know, don't follow on a regular basis, that might be one of the reasons why. For example, I know it's kind of silly to make fun of a bad movie, but have you ever seen Eurotrip before?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the scene with the Manchester United fans?
Yes.
Like that kind of stuff is like, that's what's beaten
into
their heads.
In this.
Yes, it's Vinnie Jones who asked them to sing the sing the Manchester United song. It's like, what's? I mean, yeah, there are songs, but there's no like definitive Manchester United song. And then from there, he opens bottles with his eyelids, and then they're bashing bottles on
I've
each other's heads, and it's like, oh, it's so funny. And I understand that it's for comedic relief, but that's the stuff that people see, and that's what they expect to be at the games.
And whereas, shame on Vinnie Jones for partaking in that.
Yeah, exactly. Although, not that surprising considering he was on my list for, you know, Bad Boys of Soccer.
By the way, his acting career seems to have gone off the rails recently.
Well, he was in Midnight Meat Train. Are you implying that wasn't a piece of cinematic brilliance?
Yeah, maybe Eurotrip's not so good, but speaking of cinematic brilliance, mm-hmm. what if some really good directors made soccer movies?
I mean, I would say Michael Bay, but I don't know how you can have things explode in the middle of the field, so maybe not Michael Bay. I think Oliver Stone could do it if he could calm down, but he's really good at kind of like the fast-paced action shots, and I think he could bring a different way of filming a soccer match than you usually see in film.
Did he do Any Given Sunday?
He did.
Okay, so it'd be sort of
hence,
like that.
If he could calm down. I think he had a heart attack halfway through there, and it kind of went nuts.
I'm thinking of, say, someone like Martin Scorsese, mm-hmm. right? Just think of like his tracking shot in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And imagine if that was following a player out of the dressing room and up the tunnel and onto the field.
That would be amazing.
That would look
good.
Would
the entire movie have a Rolling Stones song in the background?
80% of it.
Oh, just 80%. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I would watch that, actually. But no, you're right, because that scene in Goodfellas may be my favorite scene of all time, where it's like his first date with the girl and they go through all the restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
That scene's amazing, and that would be a great shot. You're right.
Yeah.
Pretty brilliant.
All right, who else we got? You got any more for me?
Peter Weir. Do you know him? He directed Master and Commander, Truman Show, Dead Poets Society. I was thinking with those three because he kind of already has the knack to do the emotional kind of drawing you in, but also the historical piece. And so I was thinking maybe like it would be kind of sad, but you could do like the Munich air disaster for Manchester United, kind of doing the historical thing and how they responded from that, because he already has that kind of touch of bringing about history in a fairly factual, creative way. So I think he could maybe handle a piece like that.
Wow. Yeah, actually, I think in a way that might be the way forward for soccer movies.
Uh-huh. Is to look back?
Just things that have already happened, famous things in football history, and then dramatizing it.
Uh-huh.
I bring that up because I'm thinking of something like The Damned United. For those who don't know, it's a fictional dramatization, yeah. I might add, of the famous English manager Brian Clough's time at Leeds United, where he spent something like 40 days.
Yeah, 44 days, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, before he was fired or quit.
So, yeah, I think that's a good point. Do you have any other ones?
I'm a big Spike Lee fan. I'd uh-huh. like to see him do a football movie. Maybe about, like, the black players that broke barriers, the first guys who really overcame racism in the game.
Like John Barnes and the whole banana incident.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I can see maybe John Barnes in Spike Lee's signature gliding shot, you know, where he puts the actor on the dolly and it looks like they're floating?
I guess the last one for me is a director that I really like. I'm not sure how it could work, but it's David Cronenberg. He did A History of Violence and Eastern Promises. Like the thing that came to mind for me was following maybe a character like Roman Abramovich at Chelsea, kind of his rise from obscurity in Russia to being this Russian billionaire who owns this famous team in London, and kind of follow
the
what
rise
he does
of
in
the Roman Empire.
There you go. Exactly. Called. Wow. We got a title.
I should be in charge of titling.
I think we got some options here. I think we need to to get some... get some pen to paper, get some things greenlit.
The one guy I would actually like to see do a football movie is Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, yeah.
The director of Lock, Stock and Snatch. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but he did the Nike commercial, The Next Level.
Yeah, like the one that's shot from, as though it's your perspective of you talking to the coaches and you playing in the game.
Yeah, and it's only 2 minutes long or whatever, but I think Guy Ritchie's got like that sort of style that he could impose on shooting actual soccer scenes that maybe could make them less formulaic and cheesy, which has been the problem. I don't know, maybe he could do it. I'd also just like to see him get back in the game a little bit, because it's gone off the rails a bit lately.
A little bit. Maybe he could get Vinnie Jones in there and they could both revive their careers together.
That could work. All right, write that down.
It's written. And then obviously, aside from, you know, feature fictional films, the one place to look for, you know, well-done pieces on soccer specifically would be documentaries.
Absolutely. I mean, we've done a lot of complaining the last 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some excellent, excellent soccer documentaries out there. Mm. There are actually, before we get on with this, there are some good fictional movies.
Yeah.
And we deliberately haven't mentioned them here because we're going to do our top five favorite soccer movies later on. We're going to sort of exclude documentaries and just do our favorite fictional movies.
Mm-hmm.
But documentaries.
Yeah, the one that obviously jumps to mind is the one that ESPN did like a year or two ago, Once in a Lifetime, which is the story of the New York Cosmos.
Yeah.
Which is basically the North American Soccer League.
In the 70s, right?
70s and 80s, yeah. It was the precursor to the MLS. They had no salary cap, and so players like Pele and Franz Beckenbauer came.
And that crazy Italian guy. Who's
Giorgio Chinaglia, whatever his name is. Is that his name?
I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but everyone knows who we mean, right? He played for the Cosmos.
Yeah, and it was just like the movie kind of puts forth the idea that they were as big as disco, you know, that they were, it was like, I'm with the cosmos was this, I think that's the catchphrase from it is I'm with the cosmos was equivalent with I'm with the band. Like you were the celebrity in New York. They were the big name. Obviously it's the 70s and 80s. You can imagine the negative aspects of living in New York during that time as well.
I'm also thinking a movie like Zidane, A 21st Century Portrait.
Right, yeah.
We were talking earlier about the difficulties of filming soccer action, mm-hmm. and how there's not enough narrative drama in a soccer game.
Yeah.
But this is one game following the French legend Zinedine Zidane playing mm-hmm. for Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no narrative to it. It's just following him around and just watching him up close during a game for 90 minutes. And it sounds like a terrible idea, but it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I've heard really good things. And then, of course, if brevity isn't your thing, there's the 11-hour documentary, A History of Soccer, The Beautiful Game. It goes through everything. It goes through, like, the role of soccer in Victorian England to the rise of soccer in Latin America to, you know, club loyalty versus international loyalty. It really covers it all in different perspectives.
Take a week off work and watch that.
Good work. I don't see why not.
Other documentaries, I haven't seen it, but I've heard that The Miracle of Bern about Germany's 1954 World Cup win is excellent. Mm-hmm. That's secondhand knowledge, but yeah.
And then I guess the only other one that really comes to mind for me would be Kicking It, the documentary about the Homeless World Cup.
Yeah, I think it was the 2006 Homeless World Cup. Mm-hmm. I think, is it an ESPN? I saw it on ESPN. I think it was ESPN.
I'm not entirely sure. And they usually do pretty good documentaries.
Yeah, and that was great. You see some of the action. You get to meet a lot mm-hmm. of the homeless players, and you see how it affects their lives. That's a great film.
Yeah. Obviously, at this point, we've been kind of complaining about soccer movies for the past, 15 minutes. So that said, stay tuned for our top five best soccer films.
Yeah, which will be a lot more positive. That's coming up after this station ID.
There you go.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us. And now it's time for our top five, and as promised, we're going to give you our top five favorite soccer movies.
Yeah, so that's going to be fictional scripted movies as opposed to documentaries, because right. There are too many good documentaries, they dominate the list.
Yeah, definitely.
But then also to make it a little easier, we're going to include films that just have a soccer scene or a good soccer scene. It doesn't have to be an entire movie focused on soccer.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
So we'll start with Taylor, your number five.
Yeah, I exploited that loophole because my number five is Rounders. For those of you who have seen it, at the very end of the film, Matt Damon goes in to play against John Malkovich's character, that's Teddy KGB, who supposedly has shady connections to the Russian underworld.
What do you mean play against?
In poker. He's playing him in poker.
Oh, okay, it's Rounders.
And as he comes into Teddy KGB's underground lair, KGB is watching soccer on television. And to me, that was always really cool that this ruthless kind of mafia enforcer guy was watching soccer and not, you know, football or basketball.
I like that there's a movie on our list that features an underground lair. I wasn't expecting that. That's kind of good. So my number five is the Iranian movie Offside.
Mm-hmm.
It's set against the backdrop of a World Cup qualifier where Iran had to win to go to the 2006 World Cup.
Yeah, I heard about this.
It's a group of women who want to go to the game but can't because women aren't allowed to watch men's soccer games to mix with the male crowd.
Yeah.
And so they disguise themselves to try to get into the game.
Mm-hmm.
What I really like about it is that there's a real football match going on. That match really happened, Iran-Bahrain.
Mm-hmm.
The action is based around the actual football match.
Right, and so it's like there's a soccer game going on, but that's kind of secondary to the overall plot.
Yeah, and as the match progresses, the drama progresses. It's sort of built around it, and I think that's a really creative and clever way to shoot a soccer film.
Nice. Well, my number four isn't quite as dramatic when it comes to on-field action because it's Bennett Like Beckham. Firstly, because it introduced me to my love of Keira Knightley, but more importantly, because it also reminds me of a simpler time when I didn't hate David Beckham when he played for Manchester United, and I still considered him a decent player. And then lastly, it kind of introduced the American audience to the idea of women's soccer and the idea that women played soccer in England. I didn't even really know that, honestly, that they had kind of organized leagues and things that. And so,
but at the end, I don't want to ruin it, but doesn't she come over to America?
To play a professional career. Well, no, to play in college. They both get college scholarships.
Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose we should offer a belated spoiler alert.
maybe.
All right. Well, my number four is Kes.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, it's a film by the director Ken Loach.
Okay.
In the 60s. It's set in Yorkshire, in England, in the north.
Thanks.
for those who don't know.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's not a soccer movie at all. It's about this young kid from a poor background, and he owns, I think, a falcon called Kes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whole other thing. But there's a brilliant, brilliant football scene in there. The teacher puts himself in the game, referees the game. He's like a 40-year-old man playing against 10-year-old boys, and he just bullies everyone around him. And he sort of pushes someone out of the way, dives in the box, awards himself a penalty and scores, and then berates the kid who's the hero of the movie for not saving the penalty. And it's just funny and also kind of scary because a few people, possibly myself included, have had similar experiences in high school.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of how I coach my 10-year-old. So I laugh, but I probably shouldn't. All right. Well, my number three is a film that you may be a little more familiar with than our listeners, but it's Mean Machine.
Not a fan.
Yeah, I figured. It stars Vinnie Jones, the aforementioned Vinnie Jones, who's kind of a bad boy. But he plays the heroic character, I guess. He's a former footballer, the former captain of England, who gets arrested for drunken assault and sent to prison.
So just the idea of Vinnie Jones as a former captain of England.
Yeah, I suppose, especially because he's Welsh, I believe.
Well, he's English, but played for Wales because he wasn't good enough to play for England.
That makes sense. But it's essentially a remake of The Longest Yard, the Burt Reynolds movie, or the Adam Sandler movie, which, pick your poison.
Adam Sandler remade the Burt Reynolds
movie. Oh, yeah, he did, and it was Poison. Yeah, but I think looking at the Burt Reynolds or Adam Sandler movies, that's kind of the reason why I like this one, is because to me it makes more sense to have prison guards playing soccer than it does football. Because I don't know of many like adult full pad, full tackle football leagues in the United States, but I can think of a lot of adult league soccer. Plus, we may not like him, but to me, Vinnie Jones is a much more realistic soccer player than Adam Sandler is a quarterback.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're listening to Tyler and myself list our top five favorite soccer movies. So my number four was the Ken Loach film Kes. My number three is also a Ken Loach film, a recent one, called Looking for Eric.
Oh, I wanted to see this.
All right. So it's about a postman named Eric,
right,
who's having a sort of crisis of confidence. But more importantly, it's about Eric Cantona, the Man United legend, who I know is your hero.
Oh, he's up there.
Yeah.
He taught me to pop my collar.
The postman Eric sort of imagines that his hero, Eric Cantona, appears out of nowhere to sort of coach him and inspire him with confidence, and they go on runs together and train. Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, sadly, that also may be one of my fantasies, but I'm not going to talk about it here. And so I'm going to move on to my number two, which is Trainspotting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, what's not to love about heroin addicts playing amateur soccer in Scotland?
Yeah.
In the main, like, the opening sequence, the main characters are playing against these, like, big brutish Scottish guys, and the big brutish guys are obviously winning. And kind of reminds me of, if you remove the heroin aspect and the fact that one of the main characters is kind of a sociopath, kind of reminds me of some of the feistier indoor games I played here in Richmond, feeling a little bit overmatched.
Yeah, plus it's kind of realistic that a team of heroin addicts would probably take a beating.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's a valid point there, Daryl.
Okay, my number two is a movie I know you maybe don't like as much as I do.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this.
It's really? Yeah, it's Kicking and Screaming.
Uh-huh.
So I like it because how can you not like a movie where there's Will Ferrell coaching a soccer team and Mike Ditka, and it's set in Chicago, is his assistant coach?
Yeah, my favorite aspect of that movie, honestly.
Why don't you go get me a juice box?
Really? You're going to quote the movie now? No, my favorite aspect of that is Robert Duvall, just because he plays Will Ferrell's dad, but also because every time I see him, I immediately think of him as the consigliere from Godfather. So for that reason, you got to love a movie where he plays a prominent role as a soccer coach.
So your number one?
Yeah, my number one, which may be your number one, I'm not sure, is Victory.
Okay, my number one is Escape to Victory.
There, technicality. But
it's the same movie, right?
Yeah. Do we have any idea why that is?
No idea.
Well, fair enough.
There's no reason to change.
And I guess we'll just jump into it. Victory was made in 1981, and it stars maybe the most ridiculous cast ever.
Maybe the best cast ever in terms of actors and soccer players.
That could be.
Let's list them.
All right, we got Michael Caine.
We've got Pele.
We've got Sly Stallone.
We've got Ozzy Ardiles.
Bobby Moore? Is Bobby Moore in it?
Bobby Moore.
Bobby Moore is in it.
Max von Sydow.
Yeah, it's an absurd. It's ridiculous. But the premise is that it's a World War II POW camp making Pele's involvement even more ridiculous, because I'm pretty sure Brazil didn't send troops. But it's a POW camp where the German commandant challenges Michael Caine to a game of soccer between the German guards and the POWs, and it eventually evolves into the POWs are going to play the German national team in occupied France.
It sounds ridiculous.
It really does. Brilliant. And it's pretty hilarious. I will say that for 1981, they do a pretty good job of kind of following the soccer action when the two teams actually play against each other.
Yeah.
But there's...
Well, also the fact that you've got some of the best soccer players ever involved in the game helps.
That does help, and it shows, because there's one sequence where Pele just dribbles the ball for like 45 seconds and he has one just hapless defender following him around. But I also love that there's another run that I think Bobby Moore goes on. And it's a shame when you give people numbers, because then you can tell where those players are. Because Bobby Moore beats number six, then number six is somehow in front of him again, then number six is over on the side of him, and then number six
is a quick recoverer.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. And then when he scores, number six is standing by the goal. So it's like he's in...
So is number six really good or really bad?
I'm going to go both. He's quick, but maybe not the most apt defender. But by far my favorite scene is, and here's a spoiler, it's at the very end. Sly Stallone has to make a PK save to preserve the draw. It's 4-4 at this point. and it's against the German captain. The German cap rips this shot to the corner, and Sly catches it.
I actually know a little bit of trivia about this movie.
Oh, yeah?
Sly's original request mm-hmm. was that he saves the penalty mm-hmm. and then dribbles upfield with the ball and scores.
That's awesome.
And the director overruled him.
And I like that they still try to make some of the characters sympathetic, because I guess it's Max von Sydow's character is the German commandant, and the fourth goal of the POW score is Pele bikes it. And, of course, all the German commanders are sitting there all angry, and Max von Sydow stands up and claps, you know, because it's a beautiful goal, and that's the whole point, is that he says that to Michael Caine. It's like, wouldn't it be great if instead of war we settle all of our disagreements on the football field? Obviously, that's a bit cheesy, but I still like it. And to be fair, it's no more cheesy than Rudy.
All right, so that was our top five soccer movies. I'm sure we missed some.
Yeah, I'm sure some people will say one of the Goal trilogy should be in there.
Yeah, if any listeners think one of the Goal trilogy movies should be on that list, mm-hmm. then keep that to yourself. but if you've got any good suggestions for movies that should have been in our top five soccer movies, email them to us at soccer@wrir.org.
Or you can post them on our website at podcast.theoffside.com.
Okay, so it's time for the spelling bee. We're short on time this week. It's going to be a lightning round. Just to recap, Daryl currently leads 6-3.
Of course you want to recap that.
All right. So the theme this week is actors or athletes who've appeared in soccer movies. Taylor, you want to ask me first?
I would like for you to spell the star of The Big Green. That'd be Mr. Steve Guttenberg.
You want me to spell Steve Guttenberg?
I would like you to spell Steve Guttenberg.
Okay. S-T-E-V-E.
Mm-hmm.
G-U-T-E-N-B-U-R-G.
G-U-T-T-E-N-B-E-R-G.
So, oh, it's a T-shirt.
I think you dropped a U instead of an E. Regardless, you have misspelled his name, and so your punishment is that you have to watch all of the Police Academy movies.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, enjoy that.
Okay, yeah, the name I have for you is a player who appeared in Victory, or Escape to Victory, who's one of the many Ipswich Town players to appear. Scottish and Ipswich legend, or at least player, John Walk, with the big moustache.
J-O-H-N-W-A-L-K-E.
Oh, J-O-H-N-W-A-R-K.
A-R-K?
Yep, John Walk.
Wark?
Yeah.
I thought that was Walk.
Well,
wow, your accent is killing me. This is all just a ploy.
The score remains 6-3 to Daryl? Yes, to Daryl.
So. Of course, there it is.
So that's the end of the show, but as usual, we'll close with a quote.
Yeah, so in the immortal words of Sly Stallone's character from Escape to Victory, this frigging game is ruining my life.